Arise and welcome to this sports court of public opinion we call Foul Play by Play, the show that provides play-by-play coverage of foul play in sports. I'm your host, the Dishonorable Anthony Variano, and I'm joined by my attorney and fellow sports fan, Michael Haas of McLarity and Haas Law PC in Glendive, Montana. If you're a listener in Montana in need of a defense attorney, don't hesitate to call Mike at 406-377-2654. How's life, Mike?
I got a headache, Anthony. Fridays before a long weekend are generally hell for a defense attorney who's got clients in jail.
Oh, no. So I pulled you out of some important stuff.
Well, you got to break the news to them because, I mean, the judges don't come to work, you know, the Friday before vacation, neither do the prosecutors.
only defense attorneys work the three-day weekend?
Well, yeah, they're the only ones who actually have to deal with these people that the others throw in jail.
So, right.
It's not fun giving out that bad news for a long weekend.
Well, I hope you took something to relieve your pain because we got lots of headlines here and none of them are good.
I haven't started drinking yet, but I'm about to start.
Okay. Well, according to Seth Wickersham, the NFL owners adopted a new national anthem policy despite an official vote never being held, according to Seth Wickersham. So he tweeted it's a typical for such a major resolution. And according to Jim Trotter, 8 to 10 owners before the meetings expressed support for keeping the league's anthem policy as is. They believe the protests were fading and the league should instead focus on community work being done by players, which I think is the right approach. What about you?
Oh, yes. I thought they should have just done what they were doing. It was fading away. And I think as everybody is, you know, stating on social media and the sports news coverage, I mean, they threw gasoline onto a dying fire and the NFL is just so goddamn stupid.
It seems like they just want to steal headlines. They're kind of like Donald Trump in that arena. They just release stuff just for the sake of dominating the headlines.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And it's me and you can sit here. I mean, clearly we're not Trump supporters and, you know, say how stupid things Donald Trump has done that in any other era of American history would not have worked.
Right.
Yet it seems like he's got a good portion of the populace who loves all this garbage, and I think the NFL is kind of following suit. But if you look at the NFL owners, even from my beloved Cowboys, you know, Jerry Jones, I mean, all these rich white assholes are the same. So, I mean, apparently the American people love them.
Yeah. Well, did you hear what Trump basically said, that the players should probably be deported if they're not willing to stand for the anthem? Because it does give them the option to sit out the anthem if they like. They just can't do so on the field.
Yeah, I actually saw that clip this morning on Democracy Now. And, I mean, I can't call him an idiot every time, but it's just, give me a break. This, you know, this forced patriotism is essentially what it is.
Right.
I mean, is that what America's come to? I mean, love it or leave it. I'm getting sick and tired of that statement. I mean, that's not what has made this country great.
Right. Well, the resolution is intentionally vague, allowing NFL owners and commissioner to determine what qualifies as respect on a case-by-case basis. So standing for the anthem with a fist in the air like Chris Long did to show solidarity for his protesting teammates would be a finable offense, even though he's standing. And then team owners can also pass the fines on to the players, which allows them to control the players. So New York Jets chairman Christopher Johnson volunteered to pay all fines incurred by Jets players for violating the policy, as did Jed York of the 49ers, I believe. But other owners aren't expected to be as tolerant. And if an owner says this team will pay anthem protest fines as a team, not too many teams or players will be protesting. Or do you expect players to unite against this policy?
You know, I don't know what I expect. I hope they do. I hope the players unite against this policy. I think what the NFL did, and I don't know why they did it, they're really turning this more into, from what it was before, you know, a protest against police brutality and racism and whatever that's going on in this country. They're really trying to turn it into a labor protest, and I hope that's what happens.
Yep, exactly.
The funniest protest would be is if the players, once they took the field, since there's flags everywhere, they just refuse to, you know, play the game. You just stand and stare at the flag for 60 minutes.
Oh, my God. That would be fantastic. I would pay so much money to see that happen. That would be better than an NFL football game.
Maybe in 2021, you know, we'll see a strike, and that'll be, I think, good for the players.
Well, I probably won't be watching if that's the case anyways. I mean, a strike would be enough to... I'm already considering giving up the NFL just because of the inaction. I'm tired of watching seven seconds of action and then watch 25 seconds of inaction. And I'm tired of punting and I'm tired of kicking in general and kickers deciding games and referees deciding games. But at least we know what a catch is, right?
Yeah, yeah. And as a Cowboys fan, I love the catch rule now.
You wish you had it when Dez Bryant made that catch, though, don't you?
Yeah, no kidding. No, I would, and we've went to our fair share of games, and that's the sad thing. I mean, I'm an avid baseball fan, and I can understand people saying baseball's so boring and whatever, but that experience at the ballpark is, I mean, that, to me, it's as close to heaven as you're going to get. NFL games, on the other hand, I mean, I'll still go watch the one or two Vikings games a year, but God, it is, it's not as fun. The game is so damn slow. And it costs so goddamn much to get in there.
It really does. Yeah, I was looking at Vikings tickets on Craigslist the other day, and some guy was trying to get $400 a seat for a regular season game.
No, that's what I love. At Target Field, I mean, you can drop $250 and you can sit right behind home plate. But there, I mean, just to get in the door, you're going to cash out $200 to sit up in the rafters. So, no, I'm not. I'll still watch the NFL. I mean, I'm not going to lie and pretend I don't still love this game. But it's more because of fantasy football and whatnot than actually watching a game for game's sake like I do every day with my twins.
Right. Well, we got to jump to our next headline. And in fact, we're going to jump to the your last headline on your sheet there, Mike. The Milwaukee Bucks rookie stun gun by police unprovoked. Milwaukee, because I mean, it is related to the anthem protests. I mean, this is what these guys are protesting, or at least what Colin Kaepernick protested. Police brutality of young black men, generally speaking. So Milwaukee Bucks rookie Sterling Brown was stun gunned by police back in January, and Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett was worried about the video's release this week and potential public backlash that could result, and for good reason, because Brown was not combative prior to being tased. An officer who was doing a business check at Walgreens stopped to question Brown about a parking violation at about 2 a.m. on January 26th. Apparently, Brown was double parked in two handicapped parking spots. This required a half a dozen squad cars to respond and back up, and then eight officers for a parking violation. Three of the officers were disciplined, with the first on the scene reportedly being suspended for 2 full days. Two supervisors later arrived, were suspended for 10, 15 days, and several others were reprimanded, whatever that means. Is that enough punishment, Mike, or should these cops be subject to assault charges?
Of course they should. Have you actually watched that video?
I did. I kind of sped through some of it because it is a long video, but boy, during the whole thing, it sure looked like Sterling Brown was keeping his cool.
No, he's keeping, well, and that's my thing is I get, once you watch the video, yeah, I get it. He had a parking infraction. His car clearly was parked in a taking up two handicaps.
Right. Basically, so write him a ticket.
Well, yeah, that is a dick move to do, to take up two handicapped spots, but my God. And that's, I think, what we don't understand. I mean, we're two white guys talking about a race issue.
Right.
It is... Yes, these cops should be subject to assault charges. Will they? I doubt it.
Yeah.
If they are, they'll get some kind of agreement we don't hear about, never have to do jail time, and they'll still be cops when it's said and done.
Yeah, they won't have to accept any guilt as a part of that deal.
I forget off the top of my head, but that the individual killed up in your neck of the woods in Minnesota, that guy who got shot with his girlfriend and kid in the car.
Right in the car, yeah.
Yeah, what happened to that cop?
I'm pretty sure he's still a cop.
He was found not guilty of the charges. So that's what I'm... Even when charges are brought, and I can't state this enough as a defense attorney, either prosecutors aren't prosecuting these individuals to the full extent of the law. I mean, you don't know how many drug cases I've got where you've got some individual, you know, with a meth pipe with residue, but there's no meth in there.
Mm-hmm.
We're throwing everything we've got at them so that they can get, you know, a felony charge on them. But you take another person's life if you're wearing a badge. And, I mean, it's
a suspension.
Kind of punishment. you're getting the same kind of punishment if I walk up to somebody in the street and punch them in the face.
Right.
It's like, it's a joke. So, yes, I think they should be subject to assault charges or worse. But, I mean, I think we know the reality is they won't be. This kind of nonsense is going to keep going on. But to tie it back into how you were comparing it to the NFL issue, did you see Steve Kerr's interview?
Which one?
Regarding the NFL, the NFL...
Anthem protest? It must have been pretty recent.
Anthem. Yeah, I mean, that's what I love, how you can distinguish the NBA from the NFL, where, I mean, the Bucks came out, the organization itself came out, you know, stood by their player, actually called the cops, you know, racist,
yeah.
Talked about the police in general in Milwaukee. You'd never see that happen in the NFL.
No.
I mean, so I wish the NFL would kind of follow suit with the NBA and realize, you know, that there is racial injustice in this country, and at least the NBA, to some extent, you know, is trying to actually address that in a meaningful way.
Well, I think the saddest thing about this is that there's so many unjustified shootings by police of black men and women that I'm just glad this officer reached for a stun gun instead of an actual gun. And the thought that at least that they didn't kill him has even crept into my mind is troubling to me.
No, that's exactly was my fear when I started watching the video, when I'm like, A, what the hell are these three or four officers doing, you know, grabbing him and throwing him to the ground?
Right, yeah, he gets surrounded very quickly in that video.
Yeah, and then once he's on the ground, why the hell are you tasing him? I mean, it's just racism. That's all you can call it, and it's disgusting. These cops should lose their jobs and should lose a lot more than that.
Okay, on that note, we'll take a break and be right back with some more foul play-by-play headlines. We're back at Foul Play-by-Play, the show that covers cheats, cheap shots, and alleged criminals in sports. Our third headline of the day is Olympic swimmer Ariana Cooker-Smith is suing USA Swimming, alleging a cover-up of her former coach's sexual abuse. Cooker-Smith alleges that Sean Hutchison groomed her for sexual abuse when she was 13, started touching and kissing her when she was 16, and engaged in sexual activity with her when she was 17. Worse yet, she alleges the national governing body knew her former coach sexually abused her as early as 2005 when she was 16 years old. The lawsuit alleges that officials did not report it to authorities and didn't protect Cooker-Smith while shielding Hutchison and the image of USA Swimming. This seems like a case similar to that of the Penn State Jerry Sandusky scandal, except we now know multiple Penn State employees witnessed Sandusky's behavior with underage boys. In this case, USA Swimming hired a private investigator in 2010 to look into rumors of a relationship between the then 21 Cookers and Hutchison, who was 39, finding no misconduct after the two and others denied the relationship. How do you see this one playing out, Mike?
All right, Tone. I think formal charges probably will come. I differ with you a little. I think it is similar to Penn State, but I also think there's one major difference. What's going to be difficult in prosecuting this matter is this notion of grooming. I don't know the law of wherever this came out of, but like in Montana, if somebody's 16, I mean me, I'm 34. I could sleep with a 16-year-old as long as it's consensual.
Right.
And while that may be gross or whatever, it's within the bounds of the law. So there's going to be this issue because my understanding is when he's in his 30s, he didn't start having actual sex with this individual until she was 16, 17. But the idea of grooming a young teenage girl or even younger than that, I think that's what's going to be a real stickler for the prosecution side. But I do think charges will be brought. I mean, Weinstein, everybody's going down.
Yeah.
I can't see with all this publicity, and I watched briefly her interview. I hope charges are brought. I think that's the only way USA Swimming can kind of try to save its face right now.
What do you say we lighten the mood a little bit with historically foul play?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, well, let's for a minute consider how lucky we are to be alive for this era in sports, because we're seeing things that haven't been done in generations. The Vegas Golden Knights are playing for a championship in their inaugural season for the first time since Cleveland Browns did it in 1950. And that's not even the most historic thing happening in sports right now, because Los Angeles Angels Shohei Ohtani is serving as both a formidable starting pitcher and hitter for the first time since Babe Ruth did it roughly 100 years ago. So I know our listeners and you want to hear some Ruthian stats. So here they are in a segment we call Historically Foul Play, because these numbers are so unbelievable, their most reasonable explanation is foul play. So
give up for the Babe!
Shout out to the Babe. If you're out there, we know you are. In 1916, at 21 years old, the Babe led the league with 40 starts and 9 shutouts, allowing a league best 6.4 hits and 0 home runs per 9 innings. The following year, at 22, the Babe went 24-13 with 35 complete games and 38 starts, covering 326 and a third innings. 326 and a third innings. That's almost a quarter of a season. In 1918, the year Boston committed to Ruth as the batter, he led the league in home runs and strikeouts, bashing 11 dingers and striking out 58 times. He posted the league best OPS of 966, and while he pitched just 166 and a third innings, which we would take from a starter at this point, he still maintained a 13-7 record and 20 starts. He also only allowed 6.8 hits per 9 innings and struck out only 40 batters on the year. To give you an idea of how much the game has changed, Ohtani at 23 has already struck out 52 batters in 40 and a third innings and allowed just 6.9 hits per 9 innings. Ohtani's OPS is 986, and he's hit 6 homers. So not only is Ohtani doing something unseen for 100 years, he's arguably doing better than Ruth did. While he's never going to pitch 25% of his team's total innings on the season, he is going to get 20 starts and is on pace to get a similar number of plate appearances as Ruth did at the same age. Upon the end of this season, we're going to be comparing Ohtani and Ruth inevitably. But to risk kind of breaking up the point of this show, I'll ask the atypical rare sports talk radio question that we don't cover on this show. Who do you want, Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani? You got 1 minute.
I want Mike Trout. And it's all because he gave me a ball one day.
That's the only reason, huh? His war has nothing to do with it.
Well, no, I think what we're seeing out of Ohtani is impressive. I think it's why I'd take Trout right now if it was my organization. I understand Ohtani's only 23. Trout's not that old either, though. He's 26. And Trout's already, to me, proven himself as one of the top two best players in the game.
Oh, no, sir. I must say you're wrong. I must disagree. You're wrong.
Harper and
Trout. Won't you listen to me? Shohei Ohtani. The man can win you a baseball game by himself. He can not only pitch you the complete game shutout that you need in the first game of the playoffs, but he can hit the one home run you need to win the actual baseball game. That's all you need.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not even through a full half of a season yet. I just want to see a little length, okay? I mean, you see with pitchers all the time who come up and that first year they're awesome, and then they have that sophomore slump because, wow, now every team's seen you and we know how to hit you. So I want to.
So you stick him in the outfield and let them hit every day.
I'm not denying what he's doing is brilliance. Brilliance, brilliance, brilliance. Trout's been doing it for a couple years now. I want to see Ohtani's, you know, a little longevity, and then we can have this discussion when Ohtani's 26.
Okay, well, that said, we'll cut to commercial break and be back with some more headlines. And we're back here at Foul Play by Play, the show that brings you the Sports Week's cheats, cheap shots, and alleged criminals. The Houston Astros cut suspended minor leaguer and former top prospect John Singleton because he couldn't resist smoking cannabis. I can relate, bud. As an advocate for cannabis legalization and a former holder of a medical cannabis prescription, I understand your struggle. While cannabis withdrawals are minimal when compared to, say, opioids or even alcohol, because the plant isn't chemically addictive like tobacco or alcohol, psychological addiction can occur. It's not unlike your addiction to those gaming machines, Mike. Those machines don't have anything in them your body can't do without, but you can't resist them. Why do you think that is?
Well, I mean, it's all about what it does for the brain. I mean, I don't know where or when I read these studies. I know I've read them. They compare, you know, gaming machines, the psychological, I guess, addiction to it as like doing some hard drugs like cocaine or what have you, just the effect it gives on your brain. I don't know where I read them. I just know that it's doing something with my brain where it's giving me that, you know, drip of happiness.
Right. The lights and sounds are giving you a dopamine release is what it is. And
a drug-like feel.
Yeah. So it's a neurotransmitter that helps control the brain's reward and pleasure centers. So your pleasure centers are just firing like crazy. This release happens naturally all the time, even during exercise. Cannabis triggers a considerable dopamine release, so unlike nicotine, which is chemically and psychologically addictive, the cannabis user is addicted to good feelings achieved through cannabis consumption. So you and the cannabis user are actually addicted to the same thing, only the triggers are different. Just because it's all in your head, though, doesn't make it easy to kick a psychological addiction, especially for those with addiction in their family history, which I'm speculating here is the case for Singleton, who substituted alcohol for cannabis after a stint in rehab following his second failed drug test. The penalty for which is a 50-game suspension, unpaid in the minor leagues. That's almost $715,000 of Singleton's $2 million annual salary, a figure considerably higher than what most minor leaguers make thanks to the Save America's Pastime Act, which Major League Baseball snuck through Congress in 2016 to keep minor league baseball players exempt from federal minimum wage laws. So most minor leaguers at the upper levels of the minor leagues, like Singleton, make $2,150 per month, according to a class action lawsuit brought by the minor leaguers challenging MLB's minor league pay schedule. Given a 23-week regular season, that's an annual salary of $12,362.50. A 50-game suspension for smoking pot would cost these players $4,415.18. So as someone who's lived on less than $8,000 a year, I wouldn't recommend it unless you enjoy sweating through summer sheets, sleeping in your van, waking up wet in a borrowed tent, failing miserably to withstand overnight thunderstorms, or living with your parents. And if you had to live on less than $8,000 a year, I'd recommend the van and then the tent over the parents. I don't know your parents. Well, I know yours, Mike, but I don't know the listener's parents, and I'm sure they're very nice people, but I it doesn't change the fact that you'll be sick of them within a week. Lower-level minor leaguers, they are going to be they won't even be able to afford the tent. Maybe the tent, but not the van. An A-ball season is less than 12 weeks long, so their $1,100 per month, minus the 50-game suspension for smoking, would leave 18- and 19-year-old kids with $873.53, which I think is less than they could make at a fast food chain.
Time to mow some lawns.
Yeah, no doubt. That's how I made my money as a kid, but I don't even think they're doing that anymore. They just install that AstroTurf. Finally, the kicker. Had Singleton stuck in the bigs, he could have smoked all the pot he wanted. He would have been required to pay a small fine for each failed test, but he wouldn't have been suspended, and he wouldn't have lost a single game check. The MLB Players Association negotiated for that in a collective bargaining agreement, but the MLBPA does not represent minor league players. So the reason for both the harsh cannabis policy and poverty-level salaries in minor league baseball is the minor leaguers' lack of bargaining power, which they could remedy by starting a union. Why haven't they, Mike? What's stopping them? There are far more of them than there are major leaguers, and a walkout would collapse the minor league business model because the owners of those teams don't pay their player salaries. MLB teams do. Are there really 6,500 minor leaguers just keeping their heads down with hopes of realizing that major league dream?
That's what I think it is. I think you've
wow.
The question right there answers it. I think they're in a very difficult position, being that close to the big show without having got there. And I mean, the MLB Players Association, which represents, you know, actual professionals, I can understand why they don't want to bring in this big group because it's going to divvy up their union members,
yeah.
I guess, financial security. But they definitely do need to do something together. I don't know off the top of my head what they could do, just because it's going to be tough for them to stick their neck out there like that when you're playing double A or single A ball, when you're just hoping to get that call up. I mean, you're pretty easily replaceable because most of the top prospects, even if they're in double A ball, have got one of Singleton's contracts where they're actually making real money.
Yeah, once you get past the A ball ranks, if you're in the league 4 years or you've got your 4 years of service time in, you're looking at another contract, which is considerably larger.
No, and I think what we're discussing is a lot of those players under that 4 year limit, though, which, I mean, that's
right.
A big gamble to risk your childhood dream in the hopes that everybody around you does it as well. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to take all of them.
Right. Sitting out a baseball game. They're all just going to have to not show up to work one day.
And that's tough to do. I mean, it's not easy to form a union, I'm just saying.
what do you think signing bonuses, what effect do you think signing bonuses have on their kind of decision maybe not to unionize, or does it have an effect?
I think signing bonuses are designed to counter that. But I don't think it has that big of an effect. I think it's just, I'll just leave it at that. I don't think it's that big of an effect.
Well, I think if a kid wants to risk his shot at a career in the majors to smoke weed, just let him or her do so. I mean, I understand the employer's interest in protecting their investments, and they have the right to do just about whatever they want with regards to drug testing. Hell, if they wanted, they could make every player take a breathalyzer test before each plate appearance or a urine analysis between innings. But being barred from a new profession for roughly 2 months is more damaging to a young prospect's career than unwinding after a brutal road trip with a joint or substituting weed for booze when the team goes out after a big win. This policy isn't protecting the employer's assets. It's turning them into liabilities, in my opinion. And if you're going to randomly drug test your employees in the name of protecting them or the game, stick to the performance enhancers like amphetamines, cocaine, and steroids, and the real drugs of abuse that are physically addictive like amphetamines, cocaine, opioids, and alcohol. If you're worried about players playing the game stoned, you need not worry because cannabis is a hell of a performance inhibitor. Our intramural softball team in college was called Bozeman Toast because we all burnt bud before game time. There might have been one or two sober softballers out there, but they weren't any good sober either. The rest of us were toasted, though, just eyes bloodshot and feet barely under us. I don't think we ever won a game. It was a pretty short season. We allowed 15 runs in the first inning of one game once, just kicking the ball around the infield and misplaying fly balls. It was the longest inning I've ever taken part in. But once our collective buzz wore off, we got back in the game and only lost by one. An at-bat in the slow-pitch intramural co-ed softball league isn't as scary as an at-bat in professional baseball, though. I imagine a 95-mile-an-hour fastball or 12-6 curveball would be the ultimate buzzkill. Your brain and body just aren't prepared for that while stoned. And that's not even the worst cannabis story of the week, Mike, because high school safety C.J. Air Harris dreamed of playing for the Auburn Tigers, but his recurring seizures threatened that dream until his cannabis medication stopped those seizures. Now that medication will keep him from pursuing his dream, because per NCAA rules, athletes aren't allowed to have any tetrahydrocannabinol in their system, THC, which is the psychoactive substance in cannabis. The cannabis oil Harris takes for his seizures contains less than 0.3% THC, according to the label, which means it doesn't get you high. This is something the NCAA can easily fix by changing the language to allow for use of non-psychoactive cannabis medications. Why haven't they?
I think with sports are catching up to the marijuana issue about at the same level, well, slower, I guess, than the national level. I mean, what is it now, 8 states?
9.
The District of Columbia?
Yeah, 9, I think.
So, I mean, we're slowly getting to where we need to be. I think you're right on point there. You could change the language because I'm not a hippie like you folks, but I have, been in Washington and seen the stores, and I'm not going to pretend I understand the... To me, weed is weed, and if you're going to use it, you use it to get high, but there are a lot of people, and it's been like this, and you'd know better than I am because you're the expert on everything weed, but it troubles me that we're not allowing athletes, because I've spoken with athletes and people who actually lift weights and whatnot, who actually use it as part of their, I guess, rebuilding their muscles and
right.
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, pain management,
And it seems to me to be a lot more natural. I mean, there's no side effects, nothing bad about it. I don't know why. I guess I don't have an answer for it because it's just stupid. I don't know why we won't allow people to use it when there's so much more worse stuff. But as with everything, capitalism rules the day. So once we start making money off of it,
that's right.
We're going to allow it. That's what the nation's doing right now.
Okay. Well, with that said, we will take a break and be back with more Foul Play-by-Play. Okay, we're back with more Foul Play-by-Play and the segment we call Statistically Significant Foul Player. Foul Play-by-Play, its hosts nor its partners practice nor condone the accusatory promulgation of foul play by athletes for the sake of the hot take. Cheats are innocent until proven guilty. That said, in this case of the statistically significant foul player, I'd like to admit into evidence the following significant statistics indicating foul play. Chicago Cubs first baseman Anthony Rizzo is third amongst active players in hit-by-pitches with 106 over his 7-plus seasons. He's led the league in hit-by-pitches twice, taking 30 for the team in 2015 and wearing 24 last year. There's a 2.6% chance a Rizzo plate appearance ends with him on first base with a bruise. You ever have a client as crafty as Rizzo, Mike?
No, but I... If you want to talk about if I can compare charges to bruises, yeah. I've had a couple of clients who receive as many charges as bruises. Kid needs to step back from the plate.
That's what I'm saying. Why don't you think umpires enforce the rule that players have to make an attempt to avoid a pitched ball? I mean, a lot of those free bases should probably have been called balls and the at-bat continued.
But that's why I think he's crafty, but it's crafty in a manly fashion. I mean... Getting hit by a major league ball is nothing to laugh off. I mean, he's paying a price to get to first. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I'm not calling the defendant a cheat. I'm just saying the statistics are significant indicators of foul play. I trust your jurors will make the right decision and find the defendant guilty of foul play given the evidence. I rest my case. Next up on Foul Play by Play, Cheats of the Week. Our bronze medalist, infamous NFL bully and pro bowler Richie Incognito, who allegedly threw a tennis ball and then a dumbbell at someone at a Florida gym on Wednesday. He was placed on an involuntary psychiatric hold by police, according to TMZ Sports. The alleged victim claims Incognito was rambling about the government and screaming at him to get off his bleeping playground, which is just rich coming from a man who lost a job for bullying a teammate. He makes this list because he was also named the second dirtiest player in the NFL by the Sporting News in 2012. That's it. Don't you think the Vikings should sign him, Mike? I mean, they need offensive line help, and he was brilliant last year.
I don't know if I'd want him in the locker room with other people. I think this guy just needs to go away.
He's still really good at his job, though. Our silver medalist is admitted steroid user and former Mets and Philly star Lenny Dykstra, who was arrested early Wednesday in New Jersey while possessing cocaine and ecstasy and cannabis. The arrest was the result of an Uber ride gone bad. The Uber driver told police he picked up Dykstra, and when he refused to change the destination Dykstra initially requested, Dykstra allegedly brandished a firearm, pointed it in the Uber driver's head, and threatened to kill him. The Uber driver said he sped into a parking lot next to the Linden police station and honked the horn repeatedly before fleeing the vehicle. Dykstra, 55, was charged with making terroristic threats and a number of drug offenses. Dykstra used to put steroids on his cereal, Mike. How's that sound?
Jesus. I don't want to get a call from Dykstra.
Our gold medalist is Chicago White Sox catcher Wellington Castillo, who has been suspended 80 games for testing positive for erythropoietin, a performance-enhancing drug that stimulates bone marrow to produce more red blood cells. The resulting rise in red cells increase the oxygen-carrying capacity of the blood and the endurance of the user. This is a more common drug used by cyclists. But what do you think about this, Mike, allowing all catchers to use steroids and then allowing the base runners to again run into the catchers?
I would have no problem with that. I'm very disappointed we took that or we changed the home plate rule. But as in, you know, other shows, I've always said, anything performance enhancement, I'm for. Let's make these guys better players.
Yeah. Let's make it would increase the offense in the league, too. I mean, catchers are, besides pitchers, the worst hitters in the league. So at least there'd be some more runs and hopefully more hard contact. But
the amount of just what they put on their bodies every year. I mean, they should be allowed to use something to help, you know, get back.
Oh man, they take such a beating back there. That concludes our Cheats of the Week. Next up, we'll get back into the headlines at foulplaybyplay.com.